On a warm spring day in the Rocky Mountains, this is Go West Young Podcast, the show about America's public lands and the great outdoors. On today's show, we are talking to Ron Hunter from Patagonia. He's the outdoor clothing company's environmental activism manager. We will ask him about why Patagonia is stepping up its advocacy for Bears Ears National Monument in a very cool interactive website, 3D video, really experience is the only way to describe it. Definitely worth checking out. And we will go searching for Planet X from a mountaintop high in Arizona this week in Western history. My name is Aaron Weiss at the Center for Western Priorities in Denver, Colorado. Before we get to all that, here's what's happening on our public lands this week. At the risk of sounding like a broken record, hey, let's start in Utah again. The state legislature there added again, as their session wound down late last week, lawmakers passed a bill tweaking their plans for what happens after Utah takes over our national public lands, setting up a Department of Land Management bureaucracy that would kick in once Utah has 250,000 acres of ownership or management responsibility. That last bit is key. The land seizure movement has realized that an ownership change is increasingly unlikely, so now they just want to take over managing national public lands. The end result for you and me is the same: less access, more drilling, more mining, more clear cuts. Utah's congressional delegation, though, still has not gotten the memo. Rob Bishop, the chairman of the House Natural Resources Committee, is asking for $50 million in taxpayer money to cover the costs of giving away public land right now. Remember, Bishop is the one who inserted language into the House rules package earlier this year that values our public lands at $0 for budgeting purposes. And Congressman Jason Chaffetz, also in the mix again, he is asking congressional appropriators to not allocate any money to the new Bears Ears National Monument. Also on the congressional front, Congress voted to kill the Bureau of Land Management's Planning 2.0 rule. Now, this isn't a policy by itself. It's the framework that BLM put in place to update a planning process that dated back to the Reagan years. Planning 2.0 was designed to give local communities input earlier on in the land use planning process. Now, by killing it using the Congressional Review Act, Congress not only sets land use planning back 30 years, it prevents BLM from implementing any substantially similar policy in the future. The bill is awaiting President Trump's signature or veto, but there is no indication that a veto is likely. If there is any good news on the Congressional Review Act front, it's that a vote on repealing the BLM's methane rule has stalled. That rule requires oil and gas producers to capture methane at drilling sites rather than letting it escape into the air. The House voted to repeal that rule, but at this point there aren't enough votes in the Senate to finish it off. It looks like the key senators on the fence include Republicans Cory Gardner of Colorado, Rob Portman of Ohio, and Susan Collins of Maine, along with Democrat Heidi Heitkamp from North Dakota, who has been a fairly reliable vote for oil and gas companies until now. If you are someone who is inclined to contact your senators, this is a live one. We here at the Center for Western Priorities are strong advocates for keeping the methane rule in place. And keep your eyes out this week for President Trump's so-called skinny budget, his dream world for government spending. We expect to see him call for drastic cuts to everything that is not the military, Medicare, or Social Security. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke has already started publicly pushing back against his boss, insisting that any cuts to frontline employees, our park rangers and land managers, are off limits. Now, that's especially important when you consider that the Park Service recorded a record 331 million visits during its 2016 centennial year, an 8% increase in just 1 year. Zinke also made headlines in a piece from Axios last week in which he was quoted complaining to the president directly about the White House dragging its feet on appointing his staff. Trump's response, according to Axios, was that Zinke would get his people, quote, as long as they're our people, referring to a loyalty test for presidential appointments. Our guest this week is the manager of environmental activism at Patagonia, the outdoor industry giant that has made big headlines twice already this year, first by leading the charge to move the outdoor retailer trade show out of Utah, and then last week unveiling a stunning website full of 360-degree videos from the new Bears Ears National Monument in Utah. Ron Hunter from Patagonia, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Aaron. Glad to be here.
I want to start with that virtual reality project from Bears Ears. How did that come about?
Yeah, that started last year with our creative marketing team having contacts with Google and them getting together and Google being interested in the project and Patagonia using Google technology. We've never done that before in any of our videos or films, so I think that was very exciting from our perspective. So my team got together and gave them some content ideas. Google gave them these incredible Google cameras, and we're off to the races.
It sounds like this is a project that it was originally going to be more of a showcase, and then with Bears Ears Under Threat, it turned into more of an activism project.
Yes. In fact, the working title for the first 4 months of the project was Celebrate Bears Ears. Then it turned into Defend Bears Ears, and then finally we settled on This Is Bears Ears. and you're right, Aaron. It did have an evolution, and as you know, we were hoping perhaps for a different outcome in the election with a president more favorable to public lands protection. And we realized that we took this as an opportunity to create a call to action around the film. And as you could, if you've seen the film, there's a quite a heavy emphasis on the call to action.
And you've been out there recently.
Yes, I was out last week. I'd been out in July for the meetings with Secretary of Interior Jewell and in Bluff, Utah, which is, you know, right on the border practically of the new monument. But we were working so much I wasn't able to get out to the monument, so I rectified that and went out last week and spent 4 days out there with various members of the conservation community, and they were kind enough to take me around. And Aaron, I'll tell you, this area, this Bears Ears area, should have been protected 100 years ago. It is incredibly beautiful, with artifacts, over 100,000 artifact locations. But it's also a living landscape for the five tribes that are part of the Bears Ears Intertribal Coalition.
You mentioned the history. We wrote a piece back last summer talking about the 80-year history going back to maps of this proposed Escalante National Monument during the FDR years. These proposals have been around there for so long. What, when you were out there, was the most stunning or surprising thing that you encountered?
Wow. The slick rock of Combe Ridge was incredible. Just the hiking up that escarpment, and then actually into the Cedar Mesa area where the you drop down into these canyons and hike along these canyon floors and looking up and seeing archaeological sites and, you know, climbing up to them and looking in and seeing corn cobs and pottery shards and things like that. Just incredible. And, you know, these things are 800 to 1,200 years old. Just that sense of history was incredible. And then the landscape was beautiful. We had great weather. March is a great time to be out there, not too hot. And things were budding out. And, again, just the landscape is breathtaking.
Gorgeous. I want to ask about your job title, Environmental Activism Manager. That doesn't, to me, sound like a job title you will find at many for-profit companies.
Right. I've actually been doing this job for quite a while. Our department has grown, and I actually oversee a number of our grants programs. I don't know if you know this, but we give 1% of sales away every year. And that's not profits, that's sales. So in a good year or a bad year, we're committed to that minimum of 1%. And so I do a number of our grants programs. I also work on our advocacy and campaigns issues, and Bears Ears obviously being a prime one right now. So I do some of the research. I have the contacts with a number of the conservation and Native American groups that are down in the area and are working on the issue. So been here 29 years, so I've made a few friends and contacts over those years.
We've seen some other outdoor companies take on this brand of activism. Keene did a bus tour in support of new national monuments last year. But with all of your experience, Why is Patagonia especially hanging its hat on bear's ears right now?
We've been a company, we've been, you know, been in this, doing this kind of work since the early 70s when the Patagonia was founded and sort of accelerated in the mid-80s. Public land protection is a real bullseye for us in terms of activism and our grants program. We believe that's one of the great American traditions is the protection of public lands. And wilderness is, you know, if you really wanted to get it a bullseye, wilderness protection would probably be the ultimate form of protection. But just any kind of public lands protection, we just think it's in a great American tradition. And we feel we get a lot of bang for our buck when we support issues like this and groups that are working to protect our public lands. So it's just been a real kind of win-win for us in terms of putting our money where our mouth is and getting results as protected land is comes on.
I suppose that leads us to the other big Patagonia story this year, which was Patagonia leading the way, pulling out of the outdoor retailer trade show as long as it's happening in Salt Lake City. Why was that so important to the company?
Yeah, we had kind of gotten to the point where we had been giving our, obviously, the outdoor industry, not just Patagonia, but it's an economic driver in Utah and Salt Lake City, $40+ million a year, and thousands of jobs are associated with the outdoor retailer store show. And we just wanted to be in a state that celebrated and respected and wanted their public lands to be there. And we felt that the state of Utah, both the state delegation and their federal delegation, were coming out with statements saying that they wanted to rescind Bear's Ears, they wanted to shrink the boundaries of Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument. So we just asked them that, you know, to change that tune, to change that story, and they weren't willing to do that. And we thought we wanted to do business and we wanted to be in a place, a state that wanted and supported and respected their public lands.
So OR has now said they're looking for a new home, and that'll be, looks like, after the 2018 trade shows.
Correct.
Patagonia's ready to go back after that once that's happened?
Yes. Oh, yeah. We'll go as long as it's not in a state that that doesn't support protection of public lands. And I think the OIA, the Outdoor Industry Association that sort of runs the OR show, is feels the same way.
I think the conservation community in general right now is approaching the Interior Department under Secretary Ryan Zinke with a bit of trepidation, you know, certainly hoping he lives up to what he's talking about following in Teddy Roosevelt's footsteps. What's your take on Zinke at Interior?
Yeah, it's, you know, Aaron, it's kind of a wait and see, obviously. I just read something today that he has very little staff that he's hired or has been appointed. So I think it's just a wait-and-see situation. He has made, during his confirmation hearings, he did say that he believes in public lands and he feels that they should stay in public hands. But we'll see what his actions are as we come down the road. And hopefully he'll see that the outpouring of support for places like Bear's Ears is important to Americans and that he takes that into consideration and perhaps doesn't listen to the Utah delegation saying that they want to rescind Bear's Ears. So let's just say cautiously hopeful, but ready to you know, kind of up the ante in terms of the call to actions if he decides to go after Bear's Ears and rescind it.
Sounds fair. Looking down the road, after this Bear's Ears fight, which certainly all of us are hoping resolves with Bear's Ears, of course, staying national monument and not turning into some giant court fight. What's next for Patagonia? What are you looking for in terms of activism opportunities down the road?
Yeah, I think first and foremost is the protection of our public lands. As you know, President Obama protected a lot of public lands during his 8 years as president. So I think we're keeping an eye on all of those. I work out of our Reno, Nevada office, and we have two fairly new national monuments in Nevada as well, Basin and Range, which he protected in 2015, and then last year, the Gold Butte National Monument, which he protected at the same time as Bears Ears. So public lands is first and foremost with that. But we're looking for opportunities. You know, we don't always want to be on the defensive around this. So if there are opportunities for more public land protection on a bipartisan level, we're absolutely going to support those efforts.
All right, last question that I love asking folks on the podcast. What's your favorite secret road trip across the West somewhere that you hope no one else finds out about except listeners of this podcast?
Okay, can I give you two?
Absolutely.
Okay, my first one is Highway 50 across Nevada. As you know, Nevada is the Basin and Range state. We have over 300 named mountain ranges, which seems odd to a lot of people. They think it's one big desert. And it's just an incredible landscape of valleys and mountains, as you drive across the landscape. And very few people go take advantage of it. You can go off 5 or 10 miles north or south of that highway, and it's just, you have basically the whole landscape to yourself. The other one, it's not so secret, but it is my wife and I's favorite drive, is down the east side of the Sierras on Highway 395 from Reno down to Lone Pine. You have the desert on your east side, and then the magnificent Sierra Nevada on your west side, and you can't go wrong. So we have a lifetime of exploring in both those areas.
Love it. Ron Hunter is the Environmental Activism Manager at Patagonia. Thank you so much for joining the podcast today.
Thank you, Aaron. Great talking with you.
All right. We always wrap up with a look back at this week in Western history. Today, we are looking to the stars. On March 13th, 1855, Percival Lowell was born in Boston. Lowell had a degree in mathematics from Harvard. He was a diplomat who spent years in Korea and Japan, wrote several best-selling books from there. But when he returned to the U.S. in 1893, he dedicated his life to astronomy, and that's when he decided to go west. He picked the town of Flagstaff in the Arizona Territory as the home of his new observatory. It was far from the city lights, with few clouds, an elevation of 6,900 feet, making it the first observatory in the world placed in a deliberately remote location for optimal observation. Lowell studied Mars extensively from his observatory, making intricate drawings of what he believed to be canals, theorizing that an advanced but desperate civilization had built them to tap Mars's polar ice caps, the last source of water on a dying planet. He was wrong about that, of course. Mars does have craters, and we now know occasional water, but no canals. Lowell's greatest contribution to science, however, was the search for Planet X, a theoretical ninth planet beyond Neptune. Lowell never discovered his planet, but it turns out his observatory did photograph Pluto a year before his death. Lowell just didn't realize it at the time. Percival Lowell died in 1916, but his observatory continued on, and in 1930, on what would have been Lowell's 75th birthday, scientists announced that they had discovered Pluto, near the location Lowell predicted Planet X would be. As it turns out, it was a good guess based on bad science. Pluto's mass didn't affect Neptune's orbit, as Lowell had theorized. Astronomers just happened to be working with an incorrect mass for Neptune. Of course, astronomers now consider Pluto a dwarf planet. It's certainly not big enough to affect Neptune's orbit. They are still out there searching for another large